This audio MP3 book is Geopolitics and Cognition Chapter 5 Self-Empowerment, which can be downloaded from audiomp3books.com. More can be read at geopoliticsandcognition.com. Personal Development. This section is based on Section 2 of Learning Autonomy in 2 or 3 Steps, linking motivation, authority, and agency, with open-ended development. Personal development, although it is a basic process that happens in all of us, is generally not well understood. This is directly apparent from, for example, the way Wikipedia, accessed August 2013, describes personal development, namely in form of barely structures lists. Personal development includes activities that improve awareness and identity, develop talents and potential, build human capital and facilitate employability, enhance quality of life and contribute to the realization of dreams and aspirations. The concept is not limited to self-help but includes formal and informal activities for developing others in roles such as teacher, guide, counselor, manager, life coach, or mentor. When personal development takes place in the context of institutions, it refers to the methods, programs, tools, techniques, and assessment systems that support human development at the individual level in organizations. According to Wikipedia, at the level of the individual, personal development includes the following activities. 1. Improving self-awareness. 2. Improving self-knowledge. 3. Building or renewing identity/self-esteem. 4. Developing strengths or talents. 5. Improving wealth. 6. Spiritual development. 7. Identifying or improving potential. 8. Building employability or human capital. 9. Enhancing lifestyle or the quality of life. 10. Improving health. 11. Fulfilling aspirations. 12. Initiating a life enterprise or personal autonomy. 13. Defining and executing personal development plans. 14. Improving social abilities. We can do better. Personal development is not just a list of activities and tricks to learn. It is definitely not an undirected process, or something that one learns from books or teachers, although this plays a role. In fact, it is an essential self-directed process of integrating knowledge with experience and planning, of which much has been known for a long time. This section shows that personal development refers to the capacity to ever extend and fine-tune one's capacity to deal with life's challenges and to co-create one's environment. Put differently, personal development, the development process that allows people to gradually master more and more of the complexity of the world and to become more and more self-deciding, agentic, and autonomous. How this become apparent from diverse domains of behavioral science is discussed in the rest of this section. The development spiral visualizes the process of personal development and it summarizes many of the results that we address in this section in as reported stadia of personal development. Development spiral. This spiral development depicts phases in personal development and terms typically associated with different development phases. The inner rotation can be described as learning to master the body, the second rotation as making the mind a reliable tool, and the third learning to effectively co-create an optimal living environment. This corresponds to a progression from right to left to right hemispheric dominance and associated strategies. See two hemispheres. Based on the depiction in Arnold 1910, p. 23. The spiral development outwards makes about three turns that reflect, very roughly, three developmental phases. The first phase is physical growth and learning to control the body. In the second phase, one aims to make the mind into a reliable instrument. The third phase, depending on the success of phase two, concerns learning to co-construct a world in which the inherent dynamics of the world are stabilized and made reliable and broadly beneficial. This leads to ever more extended, both in place and in time, environments in which one can self-maintain the condition for adequate functioning, which leads to increasing diversity and individual authority. This characterizes the outer, preconditioned, loop of the spiral development in Figure 1. The figure has a number of functional components. The spiral is divided into a number of sectors that reflect aspects of personal development without being necessarily in the strict circular progression the spiral form suggests. The end state of the spiral is referred to as self-actualization or wisdom. The solid line part of the spiral reflects development up the level of the authoritarian personality, while the dashed part reflects an in our culture non-standard additional development towards the libertarian personality type. See authoritarians versus libertarians. The main axes reflect behavior types and strategies horizontally and self-development and action readiness vertically. The diagonal axes reflect distinct development stages from diverse scientific fields, moral development, education research, and epistemological development, and brain lateralization research. In the next subsections, we'll provide supportive evidence for each axis. End state, self-actualization and wisdom. Self-actualization. Personal development in humans is a highly structured process that has been well studied in a variety of different domains that each shed more light on the phases in the development process. The development process begins obviously at conception and develops after birth in a number of stages towards what Maslow 1943-1962 calls self-actualization. According to Maslow, self-actualization accounts for the highest possible forms of psychological health and self-development. As such, it is a candidate for fully developed open-ended learning. Among the main characteristic properties of a self-actualized individual are 1. Realistic perceptions of themselves, others, and the world around them, 2. A strong motivation through a sense of personal responsibility and ethics to help others and to find solutions to problems in the external world, and 3. A well-developed personal autonomy which is, for example, visible as an utter disregard of conformity if the situation demands this and an appreciation for private time to self-develop one's potential further. Compared to not yet self-actualized individuals, they, according to Maslow's synthesis, 1. Have learned the skills to prevent or overcome one's own psychological problems that allow them to be rarely motivated by unfulfilled needs. 2. Have developed a deep and pervasive understanding of reality that they keep extending through life and that is apparent from a well-developed creative capacity to produce intended results with minimal adverse side effects, and 3. Feel a moral obligation to contribute to an improved world. These properties reflect deep realities concerning the nature of agentic life. Interestingly, the term self-actualization arose from Maslow's work on motivation 1943. But he refined and defined the term self-actualization later on the basis of case studies of individuals of whom he thought that they represented examples of self-actualization 1962. This intuition-driven, dangerously circular, process is vindicated by results later in this paper that dovetail with Maslow's conclusions while being based on entirely different evidence. Wisdom. Another way to approach open-ended development comes from gerontology and especially the role of lifelong learning and continued education for older people, which allows them to stay involved in a rapidly changing world. Ardell 2000. This led to a distinction between intellectual knowledge and wisdom-related knowledge, of which the wisdom-related knowledge develops on a basis of intellectual knowledge. Wisdom-related knowledge inductively reduces the quantity and complexity of intellectual knowledge in favor of what is deeper and more essential. Wisdom researcher Sternberg 1998 defines wisdom as follows. The application of tacit knowledge towards the application of a common good through a balance among intra, inter, and extra-personal interests to achieve a balance among adaptation to existing environments, shaping of existing environments, and a selection of new environments, over the long term as well as the short term. One might summarize wisdom as the ability to produce broadly beneficial intended results while taking the full consequences of behavior into account. Again, we find a combination of skill, tacit knowledge, and, implicitly, a pervasive, long-term, understanding of reality, in combination with an urge to improve and shape the living environment. We consider this developing urge to improve and shape living environments an essential aspect of open-ended development and propose an explanation for that below in the section on a complex world. Authoritarians and libertarians. The solid part of the spiral is the development up to the level of the authoritarian personality as defined by Stenner 2005 number 2009. Authoritarians are not endeavoring to avoid complex thinking so much as a complex world. Stenner 2009, p. 193. It is the authoritarian's underdeveloped cognitive capacity that reduces one's ability to deal with complexity. This personality type seeks, appreciates, and even demands external authorities to maintain the living conditions in which they can function adequately, normalcy. For authoritarians, authorities are the processes or agents that they perceive as responsible for maintaining normalcy, and with that their sense of adequacy. Authoritarians display bounded autonomy because they exhibit autonomy only in a suitably controlled environment. Authoritarians actively help their authorities in a particular and highly characteristic way, by reducing the perceived complexity of the environment, in particular through intolerance of diversity and by supporting some perceived central authority, an agent or process, with the same surmised aim. The dashed part of the spiral progresses beyond this level to the libertarian personality Stenner 2005. Libertarians have gradually developed the autonomy and skills to co-create living conditions in which they and others feel and act adequately without the need for external authority to maintain and create these conditions. Libertarians have internalized the role of authority and prefer therefore individual authority to centralized authority. As such, libertarians become local centers of development and growth in their social environment and consequently centers of diversity. Compared to authoritarians who can function adequately in standard situations and tend to exhibit norm-complying and norm-returning behavior, libertarians have learned to understand the world to a degree that they can cope effectively with deviations from normalcy, and they use the benefits this provides to enhance their lives. Stenner used a very simple child-rearing values test, Stenner 2005, to determine whether individuals were authoritarian or libertarian. She only used the extremes in her analysis. Participants that clearly preferred children to be raised as obedient conformists were deemed authoritarian, and those that preferred children to be raised as independent self-deciders were deemed libertarian. Apparently, this simple 6-2 option test was enough to separate people into a group that aims to avoid a more complex world and a group that can comfortably deal with some more complexity. Stenner specifically identifies the reaction to normative threats, perceptions of leadership failure and diversity in public opinion, as key difference between authoritarians and libertarians. Authoritarian behavior depends on whether or not the situation might develop beyond coping capacity. This entails that individuals with a certain level of authoritarianism may manifest entirely different attitudes and behaviors from one occasion to the next, depending upon the presence or absence of normative threats. Stenner 2009 p189 Number Stenner 2009 L p189. And normative threat only invites this kind of fear, cognitive unraveling and outbursts of intolerance among authoritarians, whereas in fact these very same conditions, i.e., the public dissension and criticism of leaders that are the hallmarks of a healthy democracy, induce only greater tranquility, sharper cognition, and more vigilant defense of tolerance among libertarians. Stenner 2009 p193. This leads to two attitudes towards a complex world. Development spiral. Main axis. The axis from the center leftward in the development spiral reflects increasingly more advanced responses to environmental challenges developing from innate, e.g., sucking, via emotional, e.g., happy or frustrated, to appropriate, e.g., culturally sanctioned, and even proactive responses, e.g., preventing future problems or creating a better society. Protruding downward is an axis denoting autonomy development. This axis develops from no autonomy at all, via the bounded autonomy of authoritarians, to the autonomy of libertarians. Extending rightward is an axis reflecting strategies developing from voluntary movements and direct perception action relations, via coping strategies for the here and now, to advanced co-creating strategies that define and shape the environment, i.e., the agent as authority. The axis extending from the center upwards reflects a development from a dependent self, to an immature and mature self. This development of the self has two separate but related facets, social and personal maturity. Social maturity is defined by measures of adaptation such as life satisfaction, environmental mastery, or positive social relations. Personal maturity, however, is indexed by openness to experience and indicators of personal wisdom such as personal growth and ego development. Staudinger 2011 Number Staudinger 2011 VFP 213. Development of the self moves people increasingly away from egocentric, dependent, and self-centered modes of being, in the figure referred to as immature self, towards the capacity to take perspectives on the self and others, and to experience positive, helpful, responsible, and mutual interaction with others, referred to as mature self. Richardson 2005 p. 145. Diagonal axis. The lower left diagonal in figure 1 simply reflects the development from a baby, which is preoccupied with discovering its body and its immediate environment, to childhood in which it is preoccupied with the exploration of the neighborhood and the acquisition of habits, skills, and knowledge, and to adulthood in which one's potential can develop and be utilized in full. The upper left diagonal shows the three main stages of moral development as described by Kohlberg 1971. Kohlberg calls the first main stage preconventional, in which the child only understands the consequences of its behavior in terms of direct effects on self in terms of unpleasantness, and in which it knows that obedience is a way to avoid punishment. At this stage, right action concerns mainly the satisfaction of one's needs. In the second, conventional phase, the individual's attitude is not only one of conformity to personal expectations and social order, but of loyalty to it. It actively maintains, supports, and justifies the order and identifies with the persons or group involved in it. This phase corresponds closely to the description of authoritarianism. The third stage is called the post-conventional, autonomous, or principled level. Individuals at this stage make a clear effort to define moral values and principles that have validity and application apart from the authority of the groups of persons holding them and apart from the individual's own identification with the group. Kohlberg 1975. This stage corresponds closely to the description of libertarians. A 20-year longitudinal study in Chicago found moral judgment development to be positively correlated with age, socioeconomic status, IQ, and education. In addition, development in childhood predicted development in adulthood. At age 36, only about 10% had reached a moral development at post-conventional level. Colby 1983, this suggests indeed that it is more an option than a default in modern Western cultures. The upper right diagonal reflects words from the field of epistemological development, see Van Rossum 2010 for an overview, and in particular from Kuhn 2000, who separates four levels of beliefs about the world. In the first realist level, assertions exist only in direct reference to a state of the world. In the second absolutist level, assertions are authority-derived true or false representations of the world. In the third level, assertions are opinions that can be freely chosen, are accountable to their owners, and that, apart from authority support, cannot be compared. In the fourth level, assertions are judgments that can be evaluated and compared according to criteria of argument and evidence. This fourth level has passed what Van Rossum and Hammer 2010 call the watershed between reasoning in terms of ready-made things, facts, procedures, existing out there, to independently constructing meaning. Since this is, again, a transition between dependence and independence of authority, we associate, but not equate, the watershed with the transition from authoritarianism to libertarianism. The last diagonal, in the lower right, describes typical activities associated with different life phases. A baby is typically involved in all forms of sensomotor explorations, in which it gradually learns to separate the whole of perceptual and motor experiences into meaningful units. This parts-from-whole approach of participatory discovery is typically associated with the right brain hemisphere. McGilchrist 2010. The second phase is typically culturally, technically, and representationally driven. In this phase, the main sources of knowledge are represented and conveyed via languages, of diverse forms, and technologically and culturally constructed objects and environments. This is a phase in which, in our Western cultures, the left hemisphere is dominant. It is also a world in which knowledge and skills are constructed from parts to whole. Knowledge and skills are typically not self-discovered but directly derived from others, authorities. In the post-watershed phase, the participatory co-creation that characterizes self-actualized individuals takes again the effect of behavior in an ever-extending context into account. This suggests a return to right hemispheric dominance. The Trivium. Section under development. This section couples modern cognitive science to the age-old concept OP, the trivium to the recent definition of open-ended development. Whatever open-ended development is, it is definitely not development aimed at interacting in a closed environment, that would only require a finite development. Open-ended development is essentially aimed at dealing with reality as it is and not with reality as it appears to be or as we can simplify it to. This entails that reality is leading, like it is in science. Developing a reality-tested belief base. Every act you do, every step you take, every choice you make is a test of your beliefs. For example, every step you make relies on the ground not changing into water or disappearing altogether. And each act that has the expected slash desired outcome is evidence that your beliefs and your reasoning capacity is reliable. But the very fact that you initiate an act is a sign that you believe you expect you can deal with the consequences of your actions. Ideas as expressed in words are of a different quality than ideas tested out in reality with whatever intended or unintended consequences. Note that this directly refers to raw power as the capacity to produce intended effects without taking into account the full consequences, and wisdom as the capacity to produce intended effects while taking into the full consequences into account. The more your beliefs and thought processes pass a wide variety of tests, the more reliable they are. In addition, the more your understanding or the world extends itself, the further in the future and the wider in spatial, cultural, technical, social, or scientific terms one's plans work will out as expected. This entails that, if all is well, our interactions with the world ensure that beliefs become gradually more reliable in terms of how pervasively they can be used to base successful courses of action on. This results in a reality-tested, globally consistent belief base. Unfortunately, the development of a high-quality reality-tested belief base is a process that, although it works in all of us, may be derailed at some point. And it is typically derailed when authority-derived belief systems, ideologies, religions, or cultural biases, or authoritarian parent, teachers, or authorities limit the freedom to consider facts critically and to either adopt them in your belief base or refute them as false or unreliable. Without this freedom, people will not fill their minds with ever more reliable and self-empowering knowledge and skills. The result is dependency on authorities to maintain the conditions in which the mind functions adequately, authoritarianism. It is therefore important that the mind can fully self-develop, without externally, authority, imposed limitations. This is probably the reason why the type of learning that leads to a reality-based belief system is called liberal education. Liberal education, New Oxford Dictionary. Concerned mainly with broadening a person's general knowledge and experience, rather than with technical or professional training. Note the use to the word education for broadening a person's general knowledge and experience and the word training for technical or professional training. Only very few of us in Western societies have received an education that allows the mind to self-develop without imposed limitations and constraints. Yet a sizable minority has learned to think properly and critically. The reason for that is that learning to think properly is a natural process. It might well be that low-quality thought occurs only in societies, like ours, that make an effective effort disempowerment to suppress the development of high-quality thought. The trivium and open-ended development. How to develop a reality-tested consistent belief system has been known since classical times, and probably well in advance of that, and it is described in the so-called trivium of grammar, logic, or dialectic, and rhetoric. There are many descriptions of these concepts. Here we add another that takes the scientific basis in this website, and in particular the open-ended development loop into account. It is loosely based on Trivium Education and Sayers, 1947. The ancient Greeks used the term dialectic to refer to various methods of reasoning and discussion in order to discover the truth. See entry dialectic, the New Oxford Dictionary, and in this context it might be better term than logic. The open-ended development loop depends, just as the trivium, on three different concepts. And interestingly, these two sets of concepts are easily connected and possible references to the same phenomena. Open-ended development loop. Table trivium vs. open-ended development provides a comparison between the three components of the trivium and the three components of the open-ended development loop and interprets each components. Trivium vs. open-ended development. Trivium open-ended development loop interpretation. Grammar. Discovery of the who, what, where, and when through interaction exploration quadrant. Extending behaviors through exploration via direct experiential evidence or critically evaluating factual evidence. Logic/dialectic. Why of the world through contemplation and reasoning consolidation quadrant. Generalization of behaviors and consolidating them. Consolidation of the knowledge and skills acquired from the grammar process through a coupling with as of yet unrelated domains of knowledge and skills. Rhetoric. The how of the world through interaction problem-solving quadrant. Fine-tuning and testing of behaviors and real-world problem-solving. Problem-solving associated with the realization of ideas in an open world. Frustration quadrant. Deactivating or unlearning behaviors. The antithesis of education, but nevertheless important since not all behaviors are productive and some should be unlearned if they do not work out in reality. The next few paragraphs are in part a verbatim copy of text in section open-ended development, if so in italic, but extended to be more useful for the connection with the trivium. Grammar exploration. In the exploration quadrant, one expresses autonomy and agency and extends one's behavioral repertoire. Like anything on the right side of the core effect plane, exploration must be unforced and self-initiated. This ensure that one is in the Vygotsky zone of proximal development, this URL where learning and ultimate consolidation is, almost, guaranteed. Exploration should however become a structured and effective process in which, if at all possible, a learner should be aware of the completeness extent of the exploration so that exploration does not leave important answers open that could have been easily filled with somewhat more strategic exploration. Logic/dialectic consolidation. In the consolidation quadrant, one develops in the absence of environmental pressures new relations between oneself and the environment, and one relates and combines hitherto unrelated knowledge and experiences. In doing so, one generalizes, stabilizes, and consolidates knowledge and relations, whether mental, social, or otherwise. The consolidated knowledge, social, relations, and skills, no longer new and unpredictable, become more and more suitable for general utility and in particular problem-solving, a left hemispheric activity. This corresponds to the problem-solving quadrant in which the agent can prove its increased competence and test and fine-tune its extended behavioral repertoire. Successful real-world problem-solving leads to confidence, which is a basis for further exploration, consolidation, and testing. This open-ended development loop is depicted in figure open-ended development loop. Grammar process, exploration via direct experiential evidence or critically evaluating factual evidence. Logic process, consolidation of the knowledge and skills acquired from the grammar process through a coupling with as of yet unrelated domains of knowledge and skills. Rhetoric process, problem solving associated with the realization of ideas in an open world. Grammar. The grammar process leads to the discovery of the who, what, where, and the when of the world. The grammar process is about small-scale structure and in particular about exploring the dynamics of symbols, objects, and processes. Play of any sort is a great way to explore and discover the structure/dynamics of any system, and the more one plays, the more one samples and discovers the space of opportunities afforded. Grammar is traditionally used to refer to the symbols of language and is as such important. In the Middle Ages, a pupil of liberal education learned a second language, usually Latin, explicitly on the basis of the grammar of the second language. This ingrained the belief that any system, however intractable it might appear initially, is subject to regularities and that these regularities can be discovered and used. This is a highly empowering realization on which all further learning. Grammar, in the sense of allowed, often sequential, relations between symbols, matches left hemispheric strengths because symbols refer to abstract entities without individuality that can however be specified to particular situations. Mathematics and computer science tap into this type of ability. Grammar in the sense of causal, local, structures that can be discovered via, playful, interaction with the world is equally important and more attuned with right hemispheric strengths. Here the object of play is a particular real-world system, with all its particular idiosyncrasies and fullness. In this case the discovery process is more aimed at learning to generalize the experience by learning to discount the particulars of the instance. An important point in both cases is that grammar is local in the sense that it, at least initially, pertains to things that are simultaneous or sequential and typically part of a single system or process. Grammar is therefore aimed at a local environment. The result of discovering and ordering the small-scale structure includes the answers to the who, what, where, and the when of individual processes that are randomly sampled from the world. Trained thinkers are very good in discovering facts and experiences in ways that reliably answers all W questions from raw data. They have developed an uncanny ability to discover local inconsistencies and to discover factual errors or lies, and they will not be satisfied or put off by inconsistencies. In addition, they know to judge the quality of information given by so-called experts and authorities and to check both key facts and random factoids pertaining to a situation. As such, they fill their minds with a huge variety of reliable facts and experiences that can be summoned when necessary and that can be used to discover and judge new raw data. This leads to a large network of connected facts and experiences from a wide range of domains. The nature and character of these domains is by and large irrelevant as long as its diversity is large and the facts and experiences derived from it mainly reliable. Logic. The logic process produces the why of the world. Logic process is about the interconnectedness of knowledge in as globally consistent manner. Small-scale logic plays a role in fact discovery and fact evaluation. But the key point of the logic process is providing answers to the why of a subject, i.e., it is about the history and complete set of influences that gave rise to it and maintain it. Or phrased differently, to understand a situation. For example, one might reflect on a bridge and why it was built just there, why it has the features it has, and why it is in the state it is. This requires the flexible combination of facts, skills, and knowledge from many different domains. A proficient thinker can rely on a huge basis of facts and experiences and use this to come up with a globally consistent belief base that approaches the consistency of reality itself. Proficient thinkers know that inconsistencies in their thoughts cannot be a reflection of, ever consistent, reality and as such it require attention in the form of new or additional fact-checking or other research. Not yet competent thinkers on the other hand are characterized by what George Orwell termed doublethink in his novel 1984. Doublethink is the act of simultaneously accepting two mutually contradictory beliefs as correct, often in distinct social contexts. Wikipedia. Doublethink is only possible when different domains of knowledge are not integrated in a, globally, consistent whole. So the purpose of logic is to connect all types of different forms of knowledge and experiences. While the grammar process is about going to the world and acquiring facts, the logic process is more introvert and contemplative. It requires quietness and a playful contemplative state of mind which allows relevant knowledge to present itself to be fit into the larger reality tested, and therefore consistent, belief base. Daydreaming, fantasizing, playful planning, discussions, and listening to real-world accounts can all be ways to connect previously unconnected knowledge, experiences, and skills. The logic process can be tedious step-by-step work, especially in the case of formal logic. Often it involves a more daydreaming or playful state of mind in which all kinds of, possibly, relevant knowledge domains and experiences are combined in search for inconsistencies to be resolved and for new relations to be discovered. The natural result of the logic process is the gradual merging of initially isolated knowledge and experiential domains into a single connected reality-based understanding of the world. In this understanding of the world, everything has a history that may not be known in full, but that can be envisioned as the result of complex real-world dynamics context, which can be extrapolated to the future. In many cases this requires some filling in, which necessitates additional research, grammar. Eventually the logic phase allows one to understand every scene and every situation in terms of relationships and dynamics. And part of these relations and dynamics can be separated from the whole of existence and analyzed as a closed system, with typical left hemispheric approaches, to solve particular problems. The result can always be reintegrated in the whole of understanding. The result of the logic process is a progressively more pervasive integrated belief base on which action can be reliably be based. Rhetoric. Rhetoric process proves that one knows the how of the world. While the logic process is primarily a mental and therefore an individual process, the rhetoric process is essentially a participatory one of, again, going out in the world to test one's ability to understand aspects of the world by co-creating new and desirable contributions to the world. The narrow meaning of rhetoric is the art of effective or persuasive speaking or writing. But this is only one way of persuasion. The best way of persuasion is by actually contributing something new and useful in a more tangible form than mere words. The key feature of the rhetoric process is realizing, and successful realization is a measure of a realistic belief base, because realizing something, and especially something new, is the culmination of a long sequence of actions. Applying knowledge and understanding expressively comprises wisdom or, in other words, it is systematically usable knowledge and understanding to explore and find the proper choice of methods for cogently expressing the conclusions of grammar and logic on a subject in writing and/or oral argumentation, oratory. The enunciation of those conclusions is called a statement of rationale, the set of instructions deduced from the rationale for the purpose of application of those conclusions, in the real world is called a statement of protocols. Many beliefs are false. Some seem reliable. Some are reliable. And some beliefs are true in a particular closed world situation. No belief is generally true, which leads to the problem of whether this statement is true, smiley face. That does not make your beliefs true in general. Given the fact that many of our belief, every act is a test of our beliefs. We only act if we expect to be able to handle its consequences. Broaden and build theory. The Broaden and Build Theory of Positive Emotions, Fredrickson, 1998, and 2005 argues basically the same as this site, but from a completely different starting point, namely the role and function of positive emotions. The really nice point of Fredrickson's work is that positive emotions and effective learning go hand in hand. Source: Barbara Fredrickson. Central to many existing theories of emotion is the concept of specific action tendencies, the idea that emotions prepare the body both physically and psychologically to act in particular ways. For example, anger creates the urge to attack, fear causes an urge to escape, and disgust leads to the urge to expel. From this framework, positive emotions posed a puzzle. Emotions like joy, serenity, and gratitude don't seem as useful as fear, anger, or disgust. The bodily changes, urges to act, and the facial expressions produced by positive emotions are not as specific or as obviously relevant to survival as those sparked by negative emotions. If positive emotions didn't promote our ancestors' survival in life-threatening situations, then what good were they? How did they survive evolutionary pressures? Did they have any adaptive value at all? Barbara Fredrickson developed the Broaden and Build Theory of Positive Emotions to explain the mechanics of how positive emotions were important to survival. According to the theory, positive emotions expand cognition and behavioral tendencies. Taking issue with the view that all emotions lead to specific action tendencies, the theory argues that positive emotions increase the number of potential behavioral options. Instead, emotions should be cast as leading to changes in momentary thought-action repertoires, a range of potential actions the body and mind are prepared to take. The expanded cognitive flexibility evident during positive emotional states results in resource building that becomes useful over time. Even though a positive emotional state is only momentary, the benefits last in the form of traits, social bonds, and abilities that endure into the future. The implication of this work is that positive emotions have inherent value to human growth and development, and cultivation of these emotions will help people lead fuller lives. The theory holds that in contrast with the benefits of negative emotions, which are direct and immediately adaptive in life-threatening situations, the benefits of broadened thought-action repertoires emerge over time. Specifically, broadened mindsets carry indirect and long-term adaptive value because broadening builds enduring personal resources, like social connections, coping strategies, and environmental knowledge. As an illustration, consider the link between interest and exploration. Research shows that initially positive attitudes like interest and curiosity produce more accurate subsequent knowledge than do initially negative attitudes like boredom and cynicism. Positivity, by prompting approach and exploration, creates experiential learning opportunities that confirm or correct initial expectations. By contrast, because negativity promotes avoidance, opportunities to correct false impressions are passed by. These findings suggest that positive affect by broadening exploratory behavior in the moment over time builds more accurate cognitive maps of what is good and bad in the environment. This greater knowledge becomes a lasting personal resource. Although positive affect is transient, the personal resources accrued across moments of positivity are durable. As these resources accumulate, they function as reserves that can be drawn on to manage future threats and increase odds of survival. So experiences of positive affect, although fleeting, can spark dynamic processes with downstream repercussions for growth and resilience. And from Fredrickson, 2005. The varied good outcomes empirically linked with positive affect support the broaden and build theory, which asserts that positive emotions are evolved psychological adaptations that increased human ancestors' odds of survival and reproduction, Fredrickson, 1998. The theory holds that unlike negative emotions, which narrow people's behavioral urges toward specific actions that were life-preserving for human ancestors, e.g., fight, flight, positive emotions widen the array of thoughts and actions called forth, e.g., play, explore, facilitating generativity and behavioral flexibility. The theory holds that in contrast with the benefits of negative emotions which are direct and immediately adaptive in life-threatening situations, the benefits of broadened thought-action repertoires emerge over time. Specifically, broadened mindsets carry indirect and long-term adaptive value because broadening builds enduring personal resources, like social connections, coping strategies, and environmental knowledge. As an illustration, consider the link between interest and exploration. Research shows that initially positive attitudes like interest and curiosity produce more accurate subsequent knowledge than do initially negative attitudes like boredom and cynicism. Positivity, by prompting approach and exploration, creates experiential learning opportunities that confirm or correct initial expectations. By contrast, because negativity promotes avoidance, opportunities to correct false impressions are passed by, Fazio, Iser, and Shug, 2004. These findings suggest that positive affect by broadening exploratory behavior in the moment over time builds more accurate cognitive maps of what is good and bad in the environment. This greater knowledge becomes a lasting personal resource. Although positive affect is transient, the personal resources accrued across moments of positivity are durable. As these resources accumulate, they function as reserves that can be drawn on to manage future threats and increase odds of survival. So experiences of positive affect, although fleeting, can spark dynamic processes with downstream repercussions for growth and resilience. Whereas traditional perspectives hold that positive affect marks or signals current health and well-being, Diener, 2000, Kahneman, 1999, the broaden and build theory goes further to suggest that positive affect also produces future health and well-being, Fredrickson, 2001. Put differently, because the broaden and build effects of positive affect accumulate and compound over time, positivity can transform individuals for the better, making them healthier, more socially integrated, knowledgeable, effective, and resilient. Supporting this view, prospective studies by Fredrickson and colleagues have shown that positive affect at initial assessment predicts increases in well-being several weeks later, in part by broadening people's mindsets, Fredrickson and Joyner, 2002, and building their psychological resources, Fredrickson, Brown, Cohn, Conway, and Michaels, 2005. This evidence motivates our prediction that positive affect is a critical ingredient within flourishing mental health. 21st Century Education. In a position paper of the Association of American Colleges and Universities College Learning for the New Global Century, 2009 about the renewed Importance of a Liberal Education for All, Future, Americans. The Association of American Colleges and Universities remarked the following when they described 20th century education. With college education more important than ever before, both to individual opportunity and to American prosperity, policy attention has turned to a new set of priorities: the expansion of access, the reduction of costs, and accountability for student success. These issues are important, but something equally important has been left off the table. Across all the discussion of access, affordability, and even accountability, there has been a near total public and policy silence about what contemporary college graduates need to know and be able to do. This report fills that void. It builds from the recognition, already widely shared, that in a demanding economic and international environment, Americans will need further learning beyond high school. The National Leadership Council for Liberal Education and America's Promise believes that the policy commitment to expanded college access must be anchored in an equally strong commitment to educational excellence. Student success in college cannot be documented as it usually is only in terms of enrollment, persistence, and degree attainment. These widely used metrics, while important, miss entirely the question of whether students who have placed their hopes for the future in higher education are actually achieving the kind of learning they need for a complex and volatile world. AACU National Leadership Council, U.S., 2007, page 1. This report, endorsed by, interestingly enough, the Rockefeller and the Carnegie Foundations and partially paid for by the Mellon Foundation, addresses the question what contemporary college graduates need to know and be able to do and what they need for a complex and volatile world to play particular roles in their multi-generational plans. The position paper takes the wholesale dedication of education to a social purpose, which Dodd, 1954, reported on, still literally because it is explicitly aimed for a particular kind of global citizenship. In fact, the report is quite explicit in that it aims to create Americans as the de facto leaders of the 21st century, who are comfortably able to deal with the diversity of a multicultural world. This, of course, entails that American students are still considered as pawns to be manipulated and that the rest of the world is treated as something to rule over. Not much is new in this respect. However, US education is not quite at this stage. In fact, the position paper is quite alarming when it reports that only 6% of college seniors are proficient in critical thinking, 77% are not proficient. Probably something similar holds for their teachers. In addition, it concludes that the silence about what matter in education is dangerous because, to students, it can send the self-defeating message that the diploma itself rather than the quality of learning it represents is the key to the future. Many students, in fact, speak of college in just that way, and they view the degree as a ticket to be stamped before they can move forward. It's just a piece of paper. But that piece of paper will. Whether you get the job is another matter because many jobs are outsourced to low-cost countries. In addition, the costs of college education have risen so much that many face a life of debt servitude, even have they obtained the degree ref. Nevertheless, when stripped of its US particulars, the position paper is interesting and a useful inspiration for improved academic education elsewhere. For example, the position paper is precise about what kind of attitude they would like to foster. Liberally educated students are curious about new intellectual questions, open to alternative ways of viewing a situation or problem, disciplined to follow intellectual methods to conclusions, capable of accepting criticism from others, tolerant of ambiguity, and respectful of others with different views. They understand and accept the imperative of academic honesty. Personal development is a very real part of intellectual development. AACNU Board of Directors Statement on Academic Freedom and Educational Responsibility, p. 23. The watershed. As a widely supported goal for university or college, and why not all, education, it is laudable to aim for students who are 1. Curious about new intellectual questions. 2. Open to alternative ways of viewing a situation or problem. 3. Disciplined to follow intellectual methods to conclusions. 4. Capable of accepting criticism from others. 5. Tolerant of ambiguity. 6. Respectful of others with different views, and 7. Understanding and accepting the imperative of academic, intellectual, honesty. Achieving it would entail a crossing of the watershed in the intellectual development of students, the transition from all opinions are valid to one opinion is better, supported, than another, Van Rossum and Hammer, 2010, which Van Rossum and Hammer identified as of key importance for the development of truly autonomous individuals. In fact, this site has addressed many properties particular to pre- and post-watershed cognition. Table: pre- and post-watershed properties organized by author lists a number of these. Pre- and post-watershed properties organized by author. Author: pre-watershed, post-watershed. Woodrow Wilson: not privileged, privileged. Sneddon: producer of utilities, user of utilities. Dewey: no, master of own industrial fate, master of own industrial fate. Labrie: useful idiot, nuanced and deep thinker. Connor: unsuitable for democracy, suitable for democracy. AACNU: fragmented and incoherent integrated understanding. Maslow: pawns to be moved by others, self-movers, self-deciders, self-choosers. Stenner: authoritarians, libertarians. Stenner: cognitive incapacity, cognitive capacity. Meadows: cannot control environment, can control environment. Van Rossum and Hammer: all opinions are valid, some opinions are better supported. 6. Epistemological development. Because the seminal work of Van Rossum and Hammer, 2010, The Meaning or Learning and Knowing, is so accessible and so relevant, the next sections will consist predominantly of verbatim selections, with permission graciously given. Especially chapters 1 and R are a must-read for anyone interested in the processes of learning, teaching, and intellectual development known as epistemological development. Developing conceptions of intelligence. Academic development involves the development of the intellect. Van Rossum and Hammer have proposed a theoretical framework that involves at least 6 levels of intellectual development. Each of these levels corresponds to a particular conception of intelligence. These 6 levels were the outcome of hundreds of an analysis of essays on the basis of open-ended questions. The subjects were hotel school students in The Hague, a school of higher professional education, HBO, in the Netherlands. One of the essay questions addressed the student's conception of intelligence. This led to 6 conceptions of intelligence outlined in table Conceptions of Intelligence. These are later combined with how students conceptualize learning and teachers conceptualize teaching. Rossum and Hammer, 2010, p. 2124. Conceptions of Intelligence. Level Conception of Intelligence. 1. No concept of intelligence. 2. Is learning at this level of thinking, intelligence is seen as a one-dimensional, self-evident concept, it says something about how smart you are, how little trouble you have with learning. However, intelligence is something that is not necessarily connected to knowing a lot, it's more an innate talent. 3. Students at this third level of thinking about learning and teaching still feel that intelligence, IQ, is fixed and innate, but that intelligent behavior is something that can be learned. The focus at this level is on applying or using one's innate intelligence, the more one uses it, the more intelligent one's behavior. 4. By students that see learning as understanding, and applying what is learned based on this understanding, both in academic areas and in everyday life, intelligence is viewed in a logically coherent way, as the ability to function well and independently in everyday life. As one student puts it, intelligence is a way of life. Intelligence is also something that can be developed. It loses its absolutist interpretation and it leads to reflection about many things. 5. At his level, intelligence is sometimes seen as problem-solving in the broadest sense. It includes a view on which, problem-solving, skills are most necessary in society for it to function well, and intelligence is clearly seen as something that can be developed, and needs to be developed when society needs it. 6. At this level, views on intelligence include cognitive and affective aspects, seeing it as a comprehensive, intellectual and non-intellectual phenomenon. Where at the previous level intelligence was seen as problem-solving, here it is seen as a creative process. Perhaps the distinction is between problem-solving, 5, and problem-posing, 6. The development of conceptions of intelligence can be explained in terms of developing agency, the capacity to be an autonomous source of behavior. 1. At level 1 there is very minimal agency, the student does as told and has no notion of its role in the process. 2. At level 2 the student sees intelligence as ease of learning that is beyond control. 3. At level 3 the student begins to realize that learning and intellectual development depends on practice and is therefore in part under control. 4. Level 4 is the first stage beyond the watershed and reflects the transition from cognition without and cognition with understanding. At level 4 intelligence is no longer apparent as way of learning things, but apparent from how one understands the things one does, and now intelligence can come under full control, which leads to completely new levels of self-direction. 5. At level 5 intelligence develops further from personal empowerment to creating the conditions of a society in which one wants to live, with the consequence that the individual sees himself, for the first time in its intellectual development, as an active non-negligible contributor to the solutions of societal problems. 6. At level 6 the individual integrates intellectual and affective behavior in a more reflective stance towards societal functioning, which may include a more critical, creative, and independent attitude towards societal functioning and development. For their sample of the hotel school in The Hague, Van Rossum and Hammer found only a minority of 25% that had crossed the watershed. Although the reported results in the next section pertain to higher professional education and not to scientific education, the researchers warn for expectations that the epistemological development during university education is necessarily much different from the results reported below. In particular, they expect that the majority of Dutch university bachelors will not exceed level 3. Learning and teaching conceptions. Equally interesting are the conceptions of learning and teaching. These match the development of conceptions of intelligence. In particular, learning-teaching conceptions 1 through 3 can be associated with surface-level processing and learning outcomes that are mostly of a reproductive nature. Learning-teaching conceptions 4 through 6 in turn can be associated with deep-level processing and learning outcomes that are mostly of a constructive nature. P30 The next extensive quote provides a careful analysis of the 6 different levels they identified for conceptualization of learning and teaching. This is especially useful to apply to existing policy documents to determine from which level from which they originate. In learning-teaching conception 1, learning is not reflected upon, it is simply something everybody does, like breathing. Learning is described as a list of activities or synonyms. Students with this learning conception view teaching as the transfer of knowledge. The role of the student is minimal and the teaching-learning process is defined entirely by the teacher. To students with learning-teaching conception 2, learning is equal to memorizing and the ability to reproduce what is memorized, usually in a school test setting. Level 2 thinkers see learning in quantitative terms, learning more is being able to reproduce more, but they also have a budding awareness of not having to learn everything, being able to make a selection of the facts to be memorized. For these students, teaching needs to be clear, orderly, efficient, entertaining, and must include opportunities to ask questions, implying a limited type of student-teacher interaction in a still very teacher-dominated environment. At learning-teaching conception 3, the process of learning is selecting and memorizing those facts, procedures, ideas, etc. which may prove useful later in life. Learning and understanding both are interpreted as being able to apply what is learned in the future. The major focus of learning is still quantitative and reproductive, and neither the learner nor what is learned is changed in any way. Teaching is characterized by teacher-dominated discussion, up-to-date examples, cases from practice, and an enthusiastic teacher who shapes and motivates the students using positive and negative feedback. These students attach a lot of importance to being heard, to giving them the opportunity to express their opinions. They feel any opinion is as good as any other. About 3/4 of all our students could be allocated to one of the 3 reproduction-oriented learning-teaching conceptions described above. In moving to learning-teaching conception 4, students move across what we call the watershed. The focus shifts from taking in ready-made things, facts, procedures, existing out there to actively constructing meaning. Such students prefer teachers who 1. Challenge students to start to think for themselves. 2. Encourage students to realize that multiple informed approaches and solutions to problems are possible. 3. Encourage and coach students to develop a way of disciplinary thinking through. 4. A less formal confidence-building interpersonal relationship. Level 4 thinkers have become active participants in the teaching-learning process. Student and teacher both focus on understanding and finding evidence-based solutions within a particular discipline. They realize that most knowledge is uncertain and consequently authorities lose the exclusive ownership of it, emphasis added. Everybody may develop a point of view based on a set of arguments using the rules of the discipline. About 1 in 4 of our students had crossed this watershed to a way of thinking that is generally accepted as the outcome of higher education. On average, about 20% of our students was allocated to this particular way of knowing at any time. For students functioning at the fifth level of thinking, learning has acquired a more personal meaning as opposed to the relatively technical view on learning in the previous stage. This way of thinking is characterized by notions such as broadening one's outlook on things, opening one's mind, widening horizons, or looking at the world with those eyes. By changing the eyes one sees with, students can transform the way they perceive reality, i.e. self-transformation. Level 5 thinkers appreciate a teaching environment based on dialogue, where teachers and students become equal partners in the mutual construction of knowledge. About 4% of our students could at any time be allocated to this category of description. Note that the AACNU Board of Directors' statement on academic freedom and educational responsibility on the goal of liberal education corresponds closely to the description of Level 5. The most sophisticated learning conception that we have found in our student data is characterized by an existential dimension. The self of the learner seems to have become the focus of learning. This position is extremely rare. Only slightly more than 1% of all our students studied over about 3 decades was identified as making meaning in this way. The process aspect of this conception is growing self-awareness, looking for answers to the question, who am I? The self has become the ultimate object of reflection. The product is self-realization, becoming or defining the person you feel you are, i.e. self-definition. Good teaching to level 6 thinkers seems to be defined almost exclusively in language referring to emotion, autonomy, and reciprocal relationships, and it boils down to mutual trust and caring while showing an almost dismissive approach to teaching techniques and methods. Learning teaching conception 4 can be interpreted as the expression of academic or scientific thinking, the ability to use the full range of rules and assumptions of a discipline or system such as scientific thought. The move from reproductive to constructive thinking, the move from learning teaching conception 3 to 4, is the largest and most difficult one to effectuate in higher education. We refer to this move as crossing the watershed P3031. This leads to a summary table, including references to the conceptions of intelligence, are provided below. Developmental model of students' learning and teaching conceptions. Level learning conception, object of reflection, teaching conception, conception of intelligence. 1. Increasing knowledge, none imparting clear/well-structured knowledge. 2. Memorizing, exam relevancy, transmitting structured knowledge, acknowledging receiver, innate and fixed IQ. 3. Reproductive understanding/application or application, foreseen usefulness later on, interacting and shaping innate and fixed IQ versus intelligent behavior. 4. Understanding subject matter. Subject matter meaning challenging to think for yourself/developing a way of thinking not fixed anymore, independently thinking and solving everyday problems with ease. 5. Widening horizons. Personal development dialogue, teaching personal development problem solving skills, as needed in society. 6. Growing self-awareness, self-mutual trust and authentic relationships, caring intelligence is intellect and affect. Van Rossum and Hammer validate their 6-level approach with comparison with other accounts of intellectual developments, e.g. p. 145. Relating epistemological development to agency and authority. The epistemological development as sketched above can be connected to the development of agency in the form of particular epistemological level-dependent behavioral syndromes, as well as to developing attitudes toward external authority and the gradual internalization of authority. Table epistemological development, behavior, and authority summarizes this. Epistemological development, behavior, and authority. Level behavioral pattern role of authority description. One opportunistic behavior authority rewards and punishes one only understands the consequences of behavior in terms of direct effects on self as unpleasantness and one knows that obedience is a way to avoid punishment. At this stage right action concerns mainly the satisfaction of one's direct needs. In a learning context the individual does as told and has no notion of its role in the process. 2. Norm-compliant behavior authority corrects inappropriate behavior. The individual's moral attitude is not only one of conformity to personal expectations and social order, but of blind loyalty to it. The individual actively maintains, supports, and justifies the normative order and identifies with the persons or group involved in it. The individual understands some of the roles and benefits of learning, but learning is something that is beyond one's control. 3. Tolerant behavior authority protects individual freedoms. The individual begins to realize that learning and intellectual development depends on practice and is therefore in part under control. He/she actively searches interaction with other opinions, not in the first place to be persuaded or to convince, but to understand the basis of one's own opinions. Through this process the individual becomes aware of differences in personal expectations and social order ideals, develops personal interpretations of norms, and accepts the existence of opinions of persons or group with a different normative outlook. 4. Independent expertise authoritative opinions the individual has within the domains of competence where one feels most secure developed the critical reasoning capacity to identify better supported opinions and adopt these as substitute for lesser supported ones. Intelligence now becomes less and less apparent as a way of learning things, but apparent from how one understands the things one does, i.e., how one can apply knowledge and skills independently. Now intelligence can come under full control, which leads to further levels of self-direction, 5 and 6. 5. Principled behavior individual as authority at level 5 one becomes aware of the fact that many valid opinions exist and that context is essential for the validity of any opinion. Individuals at this stage make a clear effort to define moral values and principles that have validity and application apart from the authority of the groups of persons holding them and apart from the individual's own identification with the group, the individual is intellectually autonomous. Now intelligence develops further from personal empowerment to creating the societal conditions in which one wants to live, with the consequence that the individual sees himself, for the first time in its intellectual development, as an active and potent contributor to the solutions of societal problems. 6. Self-actualizing behavior wise individuals at level 6 the individual integrates intellectual and affective behavior in a more reflective and at the same time participatory stance towards societal functioning. This includes a positive critical, creative, and independent attitude towards society's functioning and development. At this level pretty much every thought can be and is evaluated critically and as such much attention is focused on the self. The result is maximal personal effectivity, and maximizing agency, in contributing to a better world for all through a very well-developed sense of reality, an appreciation of reality's opportunities and the acceptance of its flaws. What drives intellectual development? Both Sayers, 1947 and Gatto, 2002 have argued that normal intellectual development is a natural process. Van Rossum and Hammer agree and describe its driving dynamic as follows. After describing the various developmental stages, see especially table developmental model of students' learning and teaching conceptions, one might wonder about the logic of why students develop at all. What is the process and what are the questions that may drive development? We feel that it may be a series of cycles of differentiation and integration. Because the majority of students start higher education as level 2 thinkers we start with them, and not the level 1 thinkers who are not aware of the option of reflection. In traditional secondary education level 2 thinkers have learned to focus on what is important to pass examinations, addressing the important issue of how do I pass exams. So exams define what to learn and know. After a while, perhaps confronted with the demands of higher education and life, level 2 thinkers may experience discomfort with memorizing and passing exams alone, and the need for reproductive, meaning making and application differentiates out of learning conception 2 into learning conception 3. Learners then become level 3 thinkers trying to answer the issue, what is useful for me to know? For level 3 thinkers later work or practice define what to learn and know. The imminent future as a successful professional or working experiences may stimulate learners to develop into level 4 thinkers, learning conception 4, where the way of thinking of level 2 thinkers and level 3 thinkers become elements in an integrated system focusing on autonomy and understanding within a context, addressing the issue of how should I think, or how do I make sense of reality. This is a big change in thinking, and we have referred to this shift as the watershed in epistemology within our 6-stage model. The learning and knowing of level 4 thinkers is defined by a professional's, disciplinary, way of thinking. The realization that there may be more contexts including other autonomous people, leads to the differentiating move into learning conception 5. Level 5 thinkers focus on connection and multiple perspectives, how do I relate to other people and perspectives, and their learning and knowing is still defined externally by these perspectives. Van Rossum and Hammer, 2010, page 26 and 27. Since universities are PAR excellence institutions where intellectual development is encouraged, it makes sense to speculate about intellectual development well beyond what is possible or likely within the bounds of organized academia, but is nevertheless facilitated by the presence of a university. Fortunately, Van Rossum and Hammer dare to speculate. These 5 first tiers of development seem to focus on epistemology, knowledge and knowing. We have referred to this first set of 5 as a model of learning to know, introducing a second shift in focus within our original 6-stage developmental model. We have discussed this second shift, and the provisional second tier of development introduced below, which focuses on learning to be. Learning conception 6 can be seen either as the final stage or the first of a second type of development. Either way, it is characterized by the integration of autonomy, level 4 thinkers, and connection, level 5 thinkers, into a new structure addressing more ethical issues such as who am I. Here, for the first time, the self becomes the boss who defines learning and knowing. Level 6 thinkers have made a step upwards to another, ontological plane, which led us before to propose a change of nomenclature, learning to be me or knowing me. In response to a query what then would constitute learning to be 2 and beyond, we have used both the idea of differentiation and integration used above, as well as the idea of stepping out of embeddedness that Keegan introduced, see Chapter 3, to extrapolate a possible developmental trajectory. So if Level 6 thinkers ask who am I, Level 7 thinkers might focus on differentiation and finding out who are you, embracing the other in a new way of knowing. Parker Palmer might be referring to when he says a way of knowing and of living that has moved beyond fear of the other into respect for, even a need for, its otherness. Level 8 thinkers then stepping out of you and I might integrate this into the question, what defines humanity, to me? And after considering humanity, in becoming a level 9 thinker, one might differentiate towards non-human life, what about all other living things, perhaps in time progressing towards a new structure. Becoming a level 10 thinker could mean addressing the issue of what is humanity's place and responsibility in the system, in and towards the ecology and the planet we live on, in short, life as we know it. Although, this speculation seems to call us to boldly go where no one has gone before, we choose to leave the contemplation of life, not as we know it, to another time and place. This leaves the issue why people ask these questions undecided, although some schools of thought believe that making sense of our environment by asking questions, inquiry, may be hardwired into our brain. This analysis dovetails with the highest level in the section on intellectual classes, being able to understand how the world is understood through an independence of and flexible use of paradigms. In addition, it fits also with the concept to self-actualization that was introduced by Maslow to denote the process towards realizing full personal potential. Maslow, 1962. Maslow was the first, and arguably the wisest, researcher to study the full potential of being human. Although he based himself on a low number of examples, and possibly a somewhat biased set, he found a cluster of 14 characteristics that distinguish self-actualized individuals. The main characteristic was a very good grasp on reality. In addition, these characteristics define individuals who are accepting of themselves and others, are relatively independent of the culture or society in which they live, are somewhat detached but with very close personal ties to a few other people, and are deeply committed to solving problems that they deem important. Additionally, self-actualized individuals intensely appreciate simple or natural events, such as a sunrise, and they sometimes experience profound changes that Maslow termed peak experiences. Although difficult to describe, peak experiences often involve a momentary loss of self and feelings of transcendence. Reports of peak experiences also include the feeling of limitless horizons opening up and of being simultaneously very powerful, yet weak. Peak experiences are extremely positive in nature and often cause an individual to change the direction of his or her future behavior. Maslow believed that everyone is capable of having peak experiences, but he believed that self-actualized persons have these experiences more often. Source: Encyclopedia Britannica, Motivation. Peak experiences as moments in which structure is seen and where previously complexly connected epistemological structures become simple and in doing so free mind space for further epistemological development. Maybe that is also the reason why they are so pleasurable. In accordance with Sayer and Gatto, Van Rossum and Hammer conclude. Furthermore, we feel that this general intellectual development is a naturally occurring one, and one that is crucial to the proper functioning in a complex society including many groups, competing interests, and value systems. It might even be crucial to the survival of our planet. It is a development that can be accelerated by formal, higher, education that focuses on systemic thinking, different perspectives, or paradoxes. The development can sometimes be greatly accelerated by formal education or life's turns and twists. However, it can also be arrested for long periods of time in traditional cultures, e.g. strongly traditional education, focusing on lectures, memorization, and reproduction. Intellectual development and intellectual classes. It is fairly straightforward to connect the five intellectual classes as proposed earlier to the six-stage development sketched by Van Rossum and Hammer. For example, the intellectual slave class has no personal autonomy and conform level 1. The teaching-learning process is defined entirely by the teacher. The intellectual lower class has learned certain competences under the guidance of others, which complies with a level 2 description that learning more is being able to reproduce more in a teacher-dominated environment. This translates easily to working as being able to produce under supervision as typical lower, social, class description. Level 5 was described as broadening one's outlook on things, opening one's mind, widening horizons, or looking at the world with those eyes, which dovetails with the intellectual upper class description as they have learned that all experiences and all sources of knowledge are of potential interest so that they gradually become more competent and more autonomous for more and more of the time. The intellectual elite was described as self-actualizing individuals who, as outlined in the previous section, gradually bring more pervasive aspects of life part of their understanding. To completely match the six levels of intellectual development with the intellectual classes, it is possible to split the intellectual middle class into a lower middle class and an upper middle class. The first one corresponds to level 3, just below the watershed, and the second to level 4 above the watershed. The key difference separating the intellectual lower middle class from the upper middle class may be the discovery that all knowledge is connected, that it doesn't really matter what you learn as long as it is connected to the other things you know so that it can be made serviceable at arbitrary moments in the future. This leads to the awareness that knowledge in principle can be integrated, understood, and used pervasively through life. To requote part of the learning and teaching conception of level 4, such students prefer teachers who, 1. Challenge students to start to think for themselves. 2. Encourage students to realize that multiple informed approaches and solutions to problems are possible. 3. Encourage and coach students to develop a way of disciplinary thinking through 4. A less formal confidence-building interpersonal relationship. Van Rossum and Hammer, 2010, page 31. For the first time in life, this inspires the student to take partial control over its own learning process, which forms the basis of true autonomy, and it is therefore highly empowering. At the same time, these first steps towards further confidence building for future autonomy may be a bit frightening and are likely to benefit from a supportive environment that they search for. Epistemological development steps. This then lead to the following development shown in figure epistemological development. The modern AACNU goal for higher education is to aim for level 5, AACU National Leadership Council, US, 2007, well above the watershed and probably quite ambitious. The role of teachers. Van Rossum and Hammer describe a potential trap that occurs when educators below the watershed, who favor reproduction over the construction of meaning, become the teachers of a new generation of teachers. They conclude that teachers are indeed nothing other than students grown up, meaning that they view learning and teaching in essentially the same ways as students. It is true that teachers, in part because of their participation in higher education and their greater life experience on average, are further along the epistemological development we have sketched above, but still there are many teachers who view learning and teaching from a profoundly reproductive perspective, mainly learning teaching conception 3. When not addressed in teacher training, this reproductive view may perpetuate itself through generations of teachers who have failed to experience epistemological growth towards constructivism in higher education. Each generation of these fundamentally reproduction-oriented teachers in turn instilling the same reproductive way of knowing in their students and thereby undermining the purpose of education, teaching people to think for themselves, to evaluate evidence and to be capable of formulating an informed opinion. This means that in particular in teacher education it is important to address the more philosophical issues regarding the nature of disciplinary knowledge and theory-laden observation, as well as addressing beliefs about truth, learning, motivation, effort, talent, etc. We would suggest to pay particular attention to this in teacher education for the natural and applied sciences, e.g. physics, mathematics, law, accounting, business administration, as it may, at least initially, go against the grain of existing and future teachers. Not only will this make a start towards breaking the chain of perpetuation of reproductive epistemology, it will help teachers implement future more constructivist educational innovations more successfully. Van Rossum and Hammer, 2010, p. 576. Universities run this risk as well. However, universities, more than other educational institutes, harbor a wide range of educators and researchers. At one end exists typical domain specialists who might not have developed beyond level 3. Sneddon was professor at Stanford, and very much an authoritarian, but who are still great sources of expertise and that can help to learn students how to think, albeit within a fairly narrow domain or to their own intellectual development. But university staff comprises also of many members who are progressed far in intellectual development and who are now only an informal resource for students who want to make the most of their intellectual development. Ensuring that these educators are more explicitly and more effectively involved in the intellectual development of students may result in students that progress much quicker and therefore farther along the path of intellectual development. This untapped resource may lead not only to students that enrich society with independence, autonomy, stability, and wisdom, but they will also spawn researchers who are able to connect and unify fields of science and who easily transfer research outcomes to society. These will be the scientific and societal leaders of the future, and they will elevate the reputation of the university that educated them. In addition, they will form the educators of future students. This explains why top universities take educational quality as serious as they do. Mead Dow's hierarchy and social strata. Meadow's hierarchy is a countdown of 12 leverage points from the least influential ones to the most effective and powerful ones. Although Meadow's does not, the hierarchy can be separated in 5 competence levels to interact with systems that become gradually more powerful, more abstract, but at the same time slower. What am I doing here? 1. The least influential levels can be described as working with the system and correspond to the level that most people are generally at. Traditionally, it is reserved for the lower classes. 2. The second group of levels can be described as making the system work for you and are characteristics for the more successful and the entrepreneurially minded, which include low and medium level politicians, entrepreneurs, and white-collar criminals. These levels are the domain of the middle class. 3. The third group of levels designing and controlling the system is for policymakers such as lobbyists, politicians, high-level judges, CEOs of national corporations, and the largest investment firms that are able to determine where a society will focus on and in what direction its technology, economy, and laws will develop. These levels are the domain of the upper class. 4. The fourth group can be described as setting the goals and is reserved for highest level of intelligence agencies, think tanks, media corporations, CEOs of the largest multinationals, and a few highly effective communicators in, typically, academia and culture. This is the domain of the oligarchy. 5. The fifth and most powerful level contains a single level and can be described as determining how the world is understood and how the global society reacts to changes and challenges. This is the level in which this paper is particularly interested and is reserved for a small part of the ruling oligarchy. Skill level as cognitive abilities. Donella Meadows, 1999, original list is informative, a pleasant read, and highly recommended. Here we review it only. Working with the system. 1. Constants, parameters, numbers, such as production levels, sales prices, loans, taxes levels. 2. The size of buffers and other stabilizing stocks, relative to their flows. 3. Structure of material stocks and flows, such as transport network, population age structures. These levels describe the level relevant for those who limit themselves to tending the system or playing according to the rules and expectations of the system. It is the level of the employee, the low-level manager, or the obedient uncritical citizen. It is also the level of those who are not able or willing to work with the system and try to appropriate some benefits via social security or as unsophisticated criminal. The issues relevant for these levels are the issues that describe the detailed workings of an idealized system as if it is not intricately part of a larger and more complex, and therefore, obscure system. People who act exclusively at this level will disempower themselves by limiting themselves to the least influential levels. Skills, able to successfully attend a small part or facet of the system, but unable to fully oversee and understand the dynamics of the direct social, cultural, an economic environment. No ability to evaluate one's situation in a larger context, therefore unable to visualize and reason about cultural differences. Daily decisions are dictated by the current environment. Minimal personal autonomy and consequently a highly reliance on authorities of all sorts, especially those who tell what to do and who are responsible for maintaining a context in which one can function adequately. Making the system work for you. 1. Length of delays, relative to the rate of system changes. 2. Strength of negative feedback loops, relative to the effect they are trying to correct against. 3. Gain around driving positive feedback loops. 4. Structure of information flow, who does and does not have access to what kinds of information. These are the levels for those who are able to play with the system and are able to make the system work for them by changing or exploiting its less apparent properties and internal dynamics. This level includes entrepreneurs, mid-level civil servants, and white-collar criminals. For example, a manager who works more efficient may improve sales effectively. A mid-level civil servant who manages to decrease the effectiveness of regulatory instruments may gain considerable freedom in implementing self-generated or corrupt policies. An entrepreneur who successfully exploits a market niche will experience a period in which each sale reinforces more sales. And a CEO who wants to close a plant can start with decreasing the quality of the management to ensure an outflow of first the most talented personnel. These will be followed with the more flexible and the disillusioned workers. The resulting most loyal and desperate workers are unlikely to fight the closure of the plant. And a white-collar criminal who effectively controls the information flow can generate in situation in which his victim's sense of comfort is based on a careful selection of the available information. High comfort level of the victims tell the criminal that he can continue raising the stakes of the scam. Skills, able to understand and change the dynamics of the direct social, cultural, and economic environment. Limited ability to evaluate and adapt one's own situation reactively in a larger social-economic context. Able to visualize and understand cultural differences and to relate and interact with these differences in an effective way. daily decisions in part under strategic control. Increased autonomy and reduced sensitivity to authorities and more likely to challenge authorities when they interfere with own autonomy, but equally likely to demand that authorities uphold the conditions that allow them to work with the system. Controlling the system design. One, rules of the system, such as incentives, punishment, constraints. 2, power to add, change, evolve, or self-organize system structure. This is the typical level of top lobbyists, the top politicians, high-level investors, large venture capitalists, the daily activities of corporate bankers, hedge funds, CEOs of multinationals, leaders of policy advising law firms, leaders of top universities, economic strategists, and the visionaries who control NGOs. It is also the level some academic generalists. This is the level that determines how the game is played. That influences what will be optimizes, what will be punished, and within which constraints other have to work. This is the level that determines whether whistleblowers will be cherished as stabilizing factors or persecuted to enhance corruption and the freedom to play the system. This is also the level that decides whether a government will be judged in terms of quantifiable and seemingly tangible goals such as reducing poverty by 12%, or in more abstract terms like whether or not providing citizens with the tools and opportunities to liberate themselves from poverty. The first goal can be reduced to mere budget allocation, while the second goal may lead to disempowerment of lower social classes. This is also the level that determines how economies will develop. For example, the type of labor a country will be used can be influenced by selectively investing in industries and at the same investing in matching education. Another example is the initiation of international skills, able to understand and willing to change the dynamics of society, culture, and economy as a whole. Able to evaluate and to adapt proactively to large-scale social-economic developments. Able to visualize, understand, and regulate cultural differences. Daily decisions in the service of strategic, long-term, control. A high level of personal autonomy and a willingness and ability to lead covertly. Not subject to any authority. Able to effectively challenge and influence other authorities irrespective whether one is part of the authoritarian structure. Always looking for strategic coaching to help to guide daily decisions. Use in a slow power context, generation of bubbles. Influencing decision makers and public opinion. One, goal of the system. Two, mindset or paradigm that the system its goals, structure, rules, delays, parameters arises out of. Decision makers like politicians and CEOs are highly visible and often raised in the system they control. Through habit, education, experience, and social pressure, they are highly bound to a single system and system approach, and they are highly skilled in influencing the systems they are control. However, their focus is on the system as they understand it, and since many of the decisions they take have long-term consequences, they rely on advice and estimates of realizability and social acceptability from think tanks, NGOs, media, intelligence agencies, and a few highly effective communicators in, typically, academia, culture, and religion. Slow power should focus on this and the next level by controlling these institutions. In addition, it is important to make sure that the public debate is controlled by suitable communicators. Highly effective dissenting voices that convey messages on these levels should be suppressed. Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Pope John Paul I, Gandhi. Skills. Able to reason about the mindset of persons, groups, and social classes in terms of effective behavior manipulation through a match of personality and task. Able to reason about a wide range of societal, cultural, technological, and economics influences and their effect on a society as a whole. Able to select, prioritize, and activate social-economic changes. Full personal autonomy and the skills to influence and use the mindset of others. Highly independent of the day-to-day workings of authoritarian structures and able to make these structures work for them. Influencing how the world is understood. One, power to transcend paradigms. The most effective level of slow power is an effective use of knowledge about human nature as a tool of power. This does not entail a deep understanding of individual behavior, but a general understanding about how to influence human behavior on the time scale of generations and during moments of crisis, in combination with the skills and opportunities to use this. It relies on intimate knowledge about how individuals and societies make sense of the world, how they attribute cause and effect, and how they integrate and disintegrate, empower or self-limit themselves, and above all whether they trust themselves or some authority to determine what they should feel or think. Trust, level of individual autonomy, reciprocity, define good and bad, attribute causes to worldly of spiritual causes, palette of basic emotions in society, raise of lower the role psychological deviance in society. Spread philosophies in society. Define normalcy on psychological and social key terms. Influence the distribution in social strata. Structuring the flow of wealth. Defining and controlling the level of individual autonomy. Example ownership in Middle Ages. This boils down to a deep understanding of centuries-old and optimized approaches of human behavior on the time scale of generations and during moments of crisis. Human nature in this context is defined as the scope of human behavior insofar relevant of societal processes. Skills, able to work with human nature as a tool. Able and motivated to influence long-term, multiple generations and even centuries, societal developments related to the global distribution of wealth, the distribution of skills over social strata, shaping national identities and national likes and dislikes, and global spheres of influence. Full personal autonomy and the skills to influence the mindset of humanity in intended directions. So one might conjecture that social classes is correlated to a mastery of leverage points. Level of autonomy. Working with the system, making the system work for you, defining and controlling the system, influencing the decision makers, influencing how the world is understood, unable to fully understand and oversee, able to understand the system and exploit, able to change qualitative aspects and oversee part of the social consequences, able oversee the shaping dynamics and changing them in desired directions, able to use human nature as tool. Looking for guidance for daily matters, dependence on authority, independent enough to work with authorities for change, independence of authority and able to guide authorities, independence of paradigms. Able to use or initiate socio-ideological developments.